All right, it's Thursday. Uh-oh, somebody's reconnecting. If it's Thursday, we're doing Lynch, Kenny, and Cosentini. So joining me from the suburbs of Kansas City, from Alamogordo, Kansas, is Will Cosentini. Will, how are you?
Great. It's another great Groundhog Day here in the Heartland.
What's the weather like? It's hotter than hell out here in California. What's the weather like in Kansas?
Yeah, it was in the 90s all week, and then today it was probably high 70s, low 80s. I don't know what happened. Global warming, we should be going the other way.
Exactly.
But it was a beautiful day.
Can't beat that. Tim Lynch joins me from McAllen, Texas. Timmy, how are you? You get the heat and the humidity. Congratulations on that deal.
Oh, yeah. We've got big lightning and thunderstorms rolling through the area today. So that's delightful. Keeps the temperature down.
Nice, nice. And Jeff Kenny from San Clemente, where it's a balmy 90, like 3 degrees yesterday and today. So it doesn't happen very often. But good to be, Jeff. Welcome to the program. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much. I'm good.
I don't know how to preface this, but I think in the last week, we've seen some pretty historic stuff. And I'll preface this by saying, and you guys can comment on this, but, you know, we were alive in the 60s and watched, you know, the nation go through, you know, the part of the civil rights movement that we were alive for. And, you know, and so each of us watches this again or another iteration of it. So, I mean, that's kind of the part of the backdrop of our lives is this struggle, you know, for, you know, the civil rights in the country. So I wanted to start off with something I think is, I think is pretty disturbing, pretty significant, and I think pretty dangerous to the democracy. And that is what went on over the course of last week and through the weekend with the New York Times op-ed page, and it also happened with the Philadelphia Inquirer's op-ed page. New York Times, most prominent, publishing a op-ed, a page that's published op-eds from Nicolai Maduro, Ergenan Princip, both the dictators, and Vladimir Putin, publishes an op-ed piece by Senator Tom Cotton, who's a Republican senator from Arkansas, and it doesn't necessarily, it's not in sync. And I remember when I saw it, I was pretty surprised that they ran it. The editor of their opinion page has resigned because of I don't want to say a revolt, or I don't know how I would characterize, because of protest from New York Times staffers, some of them saying that he put their lives at risk. And so the publisher of the New York Times, who initially defended it, his name's Sulzberger, he then turned around and agreed that he should the editor should be fired. His name is A.G. Sulzberger. He looks like a relatively young guy, but pretty amazing. So Will. I mean, and again, I think anybody who listens to this segment and enjoys it, you can see that we've grown up from young, you know, professionals in the Marine Corps, you know, arguing with each other, right? And that's putting it politely, because sometimes, I mean, that's the way that we've gone up. But there's always been, you know, an element of respect, and it's certainly always been, you know, this intellectual clash of ideas, and we're all comfortable with that. Your thoughts on watching something that restrains articulate discussion in the United States of America?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting if the New York Times editorial office is now has to become a safe space. You know, and this idea of safe spaces on campus came out, whatever it was, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, and people laughed it off because, well, that's college kids being goofballs. But now the idea that what the self-styled paper of record in the United States, that people in that editorial office can't bear to listen to a contrasting opinion. I'm not sure what it says about them. You know, when people are described as deplorables, maybe that's what a whole lot of people actually believe. And they can't imagine that a deplorable, a guy who's got a law degree from Harvard, left an up-and-coming lucrative career to join the Army after 9/11, served overseas in Iraq, came back, became a congressman, now a senator in Arkansas, that he can't have a reasonably well-articulated opinion that's in contrast to the editorial office and the readership of the New York Times says something. And if people say, oh, they put my life at risk, well, in theory, one of the reasons that we revere journalists, people able to express their opinion. And so now they feel endangered. It says a lot more about journalists in the New York Times than it does say about Tom Cotton. You know, and just a historical note on the New York Times, they basically covered up the Holocaust in the 30s. They yep. knew what was going on in Nazi Germany at that time and didn't publish it. So their self-styled paper of record is a bit soiled if you read a little bit of history.
Timmy, your thoughts?
My thought is that observable reality has moved so far away from the established narrative that you can't reconcile the two of them. It is impossible for me to take seriously a journalist in the New York Times who says that their life was put in danger by the opinion of a senator from Arkansas. That is preposterous. Yet we're asked to believe this and take this as a credible thing, and this extends far outside of just this specific issue. Across the board, observable reality and what the narrative is telling you is happening is more divergent than I've ever seen it in my life, and it is ridiculous to assume that a sitting senator can't have an opinion in the New York Times. I think the problem with Tom Cotton that they have is he's young, he's articulate, he's an attractive candidate, and he's got some legitimate heft behind him. And I go back to he's young. And so that's worse than Orange Man Brad, because Tom Cotton is an effective politician. And he's going to be around a long time. And they're just trying to marginalize him from the get-go.
Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, to kind of dovetail off that and what Will said, this guy, Sulzberger, inherited that paper from his dad. And, you know, they're a Jewish family from New York. His dad didn't want to come across. Dad desperately, just like Will was saying, his dad did not want to make life uncomfortable for President Franklin D. Roosevelt. So he deliberately didn't print proof that they had that this was going on, especially they got the document, the Wannsee Protocol, right after, you know, it came out leaked in 1943. They knew what the Nazis were doing, and the New York Times would not cover it, because even though he's a Jewish American, he didn't want to make it look like they're a pro-Jewish paper. It's insane to me. When the kid kind of took over, it was during the Vietnam conflict, and the kid made it clear that he thought that the North Vietnamese were in the right during that war, and that he looked at balanced reporting as basically committing a sin, because we know what the truth is. We don't have to do this balanced thing. And so, but you had a lot of old timers there who are used to writing, you know, balanced stuff, and they had respect for the First Amendment and the fact that you got to respect other people's opinions. And that's one of the things the New York Times, you know, had a reputation for in other venues, you know, not across the board, obviously, because they covered up the Holocaust, just like Will said. But, you know, this thing about we're reaching a point now where there can be no dissent. That's what the whole thing with this no safe spaces was. We didn't see it for what it was. What it was for all those draft dodgers who had B averages in college because professors, weak professors, wanted to keep them out of the draft. They became college professors. And some of them, you know, who were like weather underground terrorists, like Bill Ayers and Bernadette Dorn, and, you know, a couple others who went to jail and then came out. They had, you know, silver spoon jobs working in the universities pushing this type of crap every year. I mean, I graduated University of Colorado in 1987, and it was a joke to me. You know what I mean? Basically, I was on the dean's list every semester for the sole reason I turned my stuff in on time. And because they didn't have any rigor, you know, because they were shitbirds themselves, you know, that was a big deal. But so I feel that this is now coming home to roost. A lot of these kids who've gone through this their whole lives of getting the participation trophy and being told that this is what's right and there's nothing can brook that. College professors being run off campus if they're even the slightest bit conservative, and to the point in the last few years, run off campus even if they're liberal, but they just didn't say the exact right sentences. I mean, especially that one college, I can't think of the name of it now, but there's some of these are
Evergreen. Regions.
Yeah, Evergreen, exactly. You know, and so now here these young people are with their jobs, and they think that they are beyond a shadow of a doubt convinced that they are right. And anyone who turns against that or even deviates a little bit from what the narrative is, they're expelled and they're persecuted. And that's what this is.
Yeah, you know, to me, that's one of the things. And I can't remember where I saw what was the issue. But I want to say it was in the last couple years. And it was a question asked on college campuses. If you don't agree with the opposing side's point of view, do you have the right to shut them down? Or do they have the right? And they said, no, we have the right to shut them down. And it might have been when Ben Shapiro, right? Remember, he was going up to Berkeley to speak, and they rioted up there. And so this thing has been, I mean, this is the new activism. But I have to say, I think it's stunning when the nation's paper of record won't stand up for diversity of opinion and, you know, essentially the First Amendment on, you know, in its pages. And to me, right, if the New York Times isn't going to do it, right, and they're the, you know, they're the beacon of virtue in journalism, I mean, what, you know, what is the tagline? Democracy dies in darkness. That's the Post. Mm-hmm. Discussion ends right in on a one lane highway. And so to me, I find it head scratching. And then the other thing is, where are the people of conscience from both sides that speak out and say, hey, wait a minute. I understand that this discussion is highly emotional, and you know you can feel the electricity in the air, right? But for the love of God, this is the United States of America. There is a First Amendment, and diversity of opinion is what makes us strong. It's what ultimately makes us a melting pot. So, I mean, and I don't use the word coward. I don't throw that word around very much because, to me, it's so pregnant with meaning. But Sulzberger is a coward, in my opinion. The white hot spotlight of history shone on that guy, and he ran for the wings in it, and he didn't do what he should have done for his industry and for the nation and for, you know, discourse in this country. And I of all the things I've seen in the last week, to me that was one of the most disturbing.
If we're not going to talk about it, what are we going to do?
There's
two alternatives, nothing or violence. And if people don't want to talk about it, they get on that slope that if it gets to violence, because we can't talk about these things,
right,
it's really hard to get off that slope.
Jeff, before you and Tim jump in here, let me just, you know, and we're watching it now in Seattle. Abandon a precinct, right? Men. City Hall gets invaded, led by an alderman. Now they've set up the independent, you know, nation or area of whatever that's reclaiming downtown Seattle. And so at what point do we have a clash of firearms over this craziness? Because we're not going to observe the rule of law, and we certainly can't debate this shit. Jeff?
Well, yeah, I think that that's exactly right. And it's more than just the New York Times. I mean, look at, I think it's because these people really are appalled by the fact that Donald Trump won the election, because like the National Review, the Weekly Standard, I mean, George Will, they totally ignore all this stuff that's going on in regards to shutting down Americans' free speech, not to exclude all those generals you mentioned before. They've all come out. They hate the president so much, they're willing to just overlook that. And that's what's really upsetting. I mean, these guys were, you know, they always were kind of like pat them. They needed to have shoulder, you know, separation surgery, because they're always patting themselves in the back for taking the high road with the liberals and stuff. Turns out they're just, like you said, cowards, you know, because they won't even go there. Instead, they talk about, you know,
I haven't seen George Will's byline. Is there something
wrong? He just put out a piece. Yeah.
I was going to say, I haven't seen his name on anything, you know, and there's been a few interesting things that you might think a op-ed writer would have food for thought. Timmy, any final words?
I never used to miss a column. And then he thought Trump was like trailer trash and we should just discount him. He was a never Trumper from like 2015 on.
Well then, at least write about it, Timmy. Any other words?
The only thing I was going to say about the New York Times guy is he absolutely takes the coward's way out, but it's portrayed in the media narrative as virtue. Cowardice is now a virtue, and that's part of what I find about this entire event that is so goddamn distressing, because I don't see how you come back from it.
Not to mention all the kneeling guys and the prostrating police officers.
I think if this thing runs its course, what happens? Seattle gets taken over by a mob, and then what happens? It gets taken over by organized crime and gangs, and then you have people dying, and then we're gonna learn, much like we learned why our grandparents were so adamant about having a savings account, we're gonna now relearn lessons about basic law and order and why we band together as citizens. The first requirement is for mutual security. We're going to relearn that lesson now because we believe
as if that's a surprise. And that's exactly where it's going to go. They're already, I was looking at this before we came on, they're already tweeting for help because the homeless people stole all their food and the police moved all their barricades. And now they're pleading for lumber and vegan food. It's hysterical as if this is a big surprise. No, this is exactly where we're going to go. And the narrative will continue to be whatever it's doing, and observable reality will it's distressing to me, to be perfectly honest.
All right.
Yeah, it's a heartbreaker.
Well, again, but things that you've grown up with and seen, the First Amendment, right? And the op-ed page, you know, wanting to smash, you know, stick your head through your newspaper because there was something written by somebody from the left, or, you know, if you're a lefty, somebody. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was just it. That was the way it worked. It was designed to be provocative and to cause thought and discourse. Yeah, we don't do that anymore.
Do you remember when we first went into Afghanistan, and I think it was around 2002, 2003, Bill Lynn wrote a piece for the Gazette where he said this thing will never be able to change the way these people think. Bottom line, he said we should drop nukes all over Pashtunistan. And he was like, how could he even suggest such a thing? He should never be allowed. Matter of fact, it was the guy who got indicted for child molesting years later who said that. And you know, I don't know if he's guilty. Apparently, he's been found innocent. But without mentioning names, but except Bill Lynn's, you know. But I remember thinking, hey, the guy. I mean, I'm not a Bill Lynn fan. I love to make fun of the guy, but I want to hear what he should be able to say. What he wants to say, he should be able to read it, because, you know, the first thing they do is you can't say the N-word. The second thing is you can't say, you know, different descriptions of, you know, sicknesses people have. Pretty soon, you got to agree with Black Lives Matter, otherwise you get shut down. You get fired. They find out who you work for, put pressure on that guy, and he fires you. And that's what's been happening. I mean, that's what I was kind of worried about, you know, doing this thing with you, Mac. I don't want you to get, like, you know, booted off the air. You know?
I'm not going to fire me.
Yeah, right.
Hey,
good.
I'll tell you this, though. If General, if General Neller had followed Admiral McRaven and gone to the University of Texas as the president and written the letter that he wrote on LinkedIn, he would have been fired in about 35 seconds.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Absolutely fired, and there'd still be a Twitter mob hunting him down for the simple crime of writing "and to black people." That right there. That's all he had to say. That right there.
Yeah.
Well, I thought the letter, you know, was refreshing in that it talked to, it spoke to leaders, right, and to different groups, and he didn't go after the president. You know, he commented on the situation and whatnot. So no,
that's observable reality.
Right.
That's what the intent was. That's what regular people read it. But you take the time to go through those comments, my friend, on LinkedIn, and it won't take you too long to find some people who raised that exact issue politely.
Again,
but were he a public official, he'd be done.
I just go back to, where are the adults, both from the left and the right, that stand up and say, hey, the truth matters, articulate discourse matters. We've got to rethink some of this stuff, because the direction that takes this to is intolerance. You know, as I've been killing every home improvement project, and I just completed my whole list yesterday, but or the day before. I was out doing it, and the thought pops into my head. You know, what would Martin Luther King think if he saw this? If he saw the intolerance and the violence, and what would he stand up and say to everybody as he spoke to different groups, right? You know, yes, we need justice for Mr. Floyd. You know, but the words, you know, I have a dream that someday my children will be judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. Well, you're being judged. I mean, you're guilty of, you know, of white privilege by virtue of being white. And so to me, are people so deaf towards our history and towards that, you know, and that's why I said, you know, we're old enough to have lived, we're old people now, whether you guys like it or not, but I mean, we've lived through this, you know, race was a fundamental part of the world that we grew up in, and where we, you know, the places where we lived and the things we saw on TV and the riots that went on, and you know, and then he was a transformational person in American history. Yet I don't know that people, like, you know, do they still reflect on what he said? And so, and I just find that stunning in terms of the direction that we're going as a nation, you know, as we wrestle with this issue here the last week. Let me switch gears. Last week is, you know, a week in terms of civil military relations that, you know, has the nation ever seen a week like that? When you have, you know, all these generals who say, yeah, you know, I'm supposed to just fade away. I got the memo, you know, but, you know, every one of them, you know, to quote who, Admiral Mullen, I can no longer remain silent. Your thoughts on, Will, your thoughts on civil military relations and after a week like no other?
Yeah, I think that the military has done itself no favors, particularly senior officers. Because if you think about it, the civil military relation is supposed to be a team of civilians who end up having to make decisions based on the best military advice that they get. And so the civilians should have an expectation of nonpartisanship, and that advice is coming from those active duty officers as a best military under their expertise. But now put yourself in the chairman's shoes. When he's sitting in the Oval Office with the SecDef and the president, and the president sees all these retired four-stars become very partisan about things. And so the president, and I'm not talking President Trump, I'm talking any president, looking at any future chairman, is he going to doubt that chairman has given him best military advice? You know, George Washington set a tone. He won the revolution, and he went to Congress, and he handed back his commission. And that has has held in very good stead throughout the history of the country. And we have had former generals become presidents, but then they have become candidates and are obviously openly partisans at that point. But when people are hiding behind their uniform and want to claim this idea of nonpartisanship, but they poison the civil-military relations by the way they act. And it may be a little bit less, a little bit more excusable if they were at least accurate with their facts. But the editorials that General Mattis wrote, that General Allen wrote, are written in a partisan style that is attempting to evoke a response amongst followers. When Mattis compares the United States to Nazi Germany, and when General Allen talks about this may be the day democracy died, those are and beyond just pure facts that they got wrong in their pieces, I think they've done great harm to civil-military relations. I think if you were to ask General Milley what he thought about it, he wished they would just take a nice cup and shut the fuck up. But they didn't. And now we have a tradition of generals who feel that they just can't keep their mouth shut. I don't know. It's probably not that hard. But they don't seem to have that discipline.
To the son of a general we go, Tim Lynch. Oh, Doc Lynch. What civil-military relations to me. I mean, your dad's, he's kind of lived that, you know. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, it's disturbing because I don't think people remember or maybe they don't remember how negatively President Carter and President Clinton were perceived by the military and how tense the relations were. In fact, Carter's wife was so offended by the thought appearance of uniforms, she banned uniforms in Washington, D.C. during his presidency. You could only wear them on Thursdays. I remember because my dad was at headquarters, Marine Corps. So we've had some very tense and tight times, but I think everybody is in agreement with how we kind of sliced this up last week. I just want to focus on General Allen because I treasure the time that I spent, you know, running over at the OCS trails and whatnot with General Allen as he mentored me when I was a captain. I respect the hell out of that guy, but when he starts talking about the slide to the United States and the illiberalism may well have begun on June 21st, 2020, and then says, remember that date? It may well signal the beginning of the end. If I take him seriously, if I take him as a serious, no shit leader, what am I supposed to do? Holy crap. What are we going to do to save America? What's the next step here?
Can I ask you to explain something to me? The slide to liberalism, like, do I not understand that term? What is he talking about that began, or culminated a week ago?
Oh, that was I believe it was the Orange Man Bad wanting to take the federal troops and enforce the peaceful. I'm not even sure what the hell he's talking about.
That's what I don't understand. Liberalism, what is it?
Yeah.
How do you connect? Can one of you, Will, you're a smart guy.
Yeah, I don't know how you connect it to. It's hyperbole.
Yeah, he's
sitting
there.
When
he says slide, he's saying the slide to illiberalism as if we're going to a dictatorship.
Illiberalism.
Because we're going to a dictatorship because the president had a desire to bring federal troops in to quell violence.
Okay, I missed two letters there. My apology. Liberalism. I was like, what?
No, illiberalism. And I want to add, I don't believe that when he was a major, he would have tolerated us bringing in something that had it may well be twice in two sentences in a row. I don't know what the hell he's doing. I don't know what he's talking about. He's not writing well after Stern.
You know, there's a lot of criticism that would sting John Allen. That, my friend, by far would be number one.
Hey, look, I respect the guy. I treasure the memory that of when he was development, but I can't agree with a damn thing he's saying.
Well, let me tell you, and what I mean is you criticizing his writing style, right? Not the substance of his argument.
Oh, yeah.
He would be deeply.
Oh, no, I know exactly what you meant.
He'd be deeply offended.
Especially true, from Tim Ridge.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff?
Just like Timmy says, General Allen, General Mattis, and for you guys, I guess, General Kelly. It's disappointing because we know these guys, and I owe some of these guys. I had like interactions with four stars, you know, General Krulak, General Jones, General Mattis, and General Neller, really, and I guess General Allen, but not while he was a general, you know, The guys we're bitching about right now, and I'm bitching even louder than you guys about them, they're the ones who looked out for me, tried to help me. The other ones fucked me pretty good, you know? And so it hurts me to say I'm fucking disappointed. They're just like guys looking for a paycheck, a job in the erstwhile, Joe Biden administration, inshallah, like Timmy says, that'll never happen, or they're trying to sell a book. Either way, they're diminished in my eyes by going down this road.
Okay, let me ask you guys a question. Is there a way that you can, because to me, one of the things, their criticism is pointed at specifically at the president. So it's not like they commented on the issue, right? Like an issue of policy or an issue of procedure. I mean, they're criticism was focused dead on the president of the United States. Is there a way that men of that stature, retired military guys, can comment on an issue without? Is there a way they can thread that
absolutely.
Needle?
Absolutely.
Well, I would say
general.
Hold on. Will has the floor.
Okay.
First, it's. When Admiral Mullen says, you know, I can't remain silent anymore. Why not? Right. You laid your uniform down and everyone has rights. But just because you can do something, does that mean you should do something? I don't know anyone in America who looks to Admiral Mullen for leadership on these things. I just don't. And what you're doing is you're speaking as the former chairman. You had your opportunity as a chairman for 4 years to give best military advice. And one of the things is you should respect the people that came after you, because I can guarantee you that Admiral Mullen did not need people chirping former four stars as he was trying to give best military advice to, I think he was with President Bush the entire time. He may have been at the early Obama years. He didn't need that outside help. And if he did, it's not too hard for those guys to figure out what his email address is and send it to him and have that kind of conversation. But when they go public, they harm our senior military people's ability to give best military advice to the president. And it's one of the bedrocks of why we are the way we are.
Okay. So you're saying there's no way to thread that needle.
No, there is.
I think publicly, it's really, really challenging to do that in a nonpartisan way.
Yeah.
And they've all failed that so far.
Okay. Let me, if any one of them writes this, I see a fundamental danger in the course of action that seems to be being contemplated in Washington, D.C. I heard the conversations about battle space, you know, the Insurrection Act of 1807, I don't believe we're there yet. And as a former chairman, as a lifelong servant to the nation, I want to raise an alarm about this issue.
Call General Milley.
McNamara call out. General Milley. Okay, hold on. So, to me, that's addressing the issue. You're not, you know, leveling your crosshairs at the president. You're kind of, but you're so alarmed that you feel you have to speak. Is that as good as it gets? And or should that be in a letter from you to the president, to the chairman, and the SECTA?
Send it in that manner so that it's not public. Because when you raise that issue, what you're basically saying is, well, all the guys that came after me are too damn stupid to think about this. I'm obviously the smart guy, so I got to bring it up.
Right.
General Keane is on Fox News a lot.
Yeah.
He's excellent at exactly the type of thing you just did, Mac. And probably what he'd do is break it up in like three or four different things. And you can say almost the same stuff without being disrespectful, not only to the president, but to us. You know, I mean, you know what I'm saying? There's a way to do that. And that guy had masters it. I mean, you know, he's an impressive guy anyway. But and he's always dead on the mark. You know?
Who is the three-star? Who is the three-star who used to be a correspondent for the New York Times?
Oh, I don't. The Army guy?
He returned. No, Marine. Korea vet, three-star, and he was a correspondent for the Times.
General Traynor.
Bernard Traynor.
General Traynor.
Yeah.
So Traynor.
Another one.
The difference between what Traynor did and what's going on now is Traynor was in there every week talking about defense issues and educating people about defense issues, as opposed to, again, even Mac, the way you bring it up, you're a look at me moment. Look at me. I'm smarter than everyone. I think we should be concerned about the Insurrection Act of 18. General Milley thought about that, brought it up to the president, had his counsel talk to him about that so that when they went into the room to have that discussion. And if you don't think that happens and you're a former chairman, well, you're an idiot.
Right.
And Mattis knows those discussions happen.
And you just called Milley an idiot in public. I mean, Milley, of all the people, the SecDef. You know, but Millie.
Absolutely.
Right. All right. Before we move on, Timmy, any final thoughts on this?
Yeah, I would just say that Victor Davis Hanson came out with a piece today, and he had four simple suggestions. The first being about generals that want to write like this, and one is that they should under no circumstances invoke Nazi Germany or Hitler, and two, the disagreement should not hint of any act of resistance or removal of the sitting president. Three, the condemnation should be on factual evidence, not a mode of anger. And four, there should never be a semblance of coordination amongst retired flag officers. I think those are four simple ways of looking at how this should be done amongst retired flag officers. And, you know, Victor Davis Hanson is like the new George Will. I believe everything he says now.
Yeah,
where do you, just so everybody knows, Timmy, tell people where they can find him.
It's a National Review. The article was Not So Retired Military Leaders, and it came out this morning. Very well done, as is everything he writes. He's phenomenal.
All right. Another story that's very prominent in the news is the Marine Corps has banned the Confederate flag from public places. So you have to read the article to see what they did. So coffee mugs, the workplace. They have no right, though, to go into your BEQ, BOQ, your wall locker, your car, or things like that. So the public display of such things, the Navy is evidently going to follow suit. And then the issue of naming of bases has come up again. Renaming bases, you know, obviously in the South, named after Confederate generals who fought against the United States. Will? Thoughts on that?
Two things. So when I was in 2nd Battalion, 6th Marines, I was CEO of Echo Company. And I forget, we had some sort of incident in battalion. And John Allen was my battalion commander. And John Allen made it clear that you could not display the Confederate flag in your BOQ room. And that meant that a whole lot of state flags, which have got Confederate battle flags as integral as part of their state flags, were not allowed. And I forget what the incident was, but I thought about it for a while. I said, you know, that makes sense. I've got my wife's family had significant number of Confederate veterans. And I believe on my mother's side, there may have been Confederate veterans. I don't know that for a fact. You know, it's part of our history. Unfortunately, the Confederate battle flag has been hijacked by you know, white nationalist type people. And so it troubles me, but I can't disagree with that. And when it comes to renaming bases, I mean, if you think about it, I don't know why we named the bases after some of the people we did. I understand there was history involved, but you could have picked probably some better people. It's not a hill I want to die on. We can't rename them, but I just say, where does it end? Where does it end?
Yeah.
And I'm not talking military bases, but you know, I think that the guy who Yale is named after, was involved in the slave trade. History is what it is. And if you can't look at that and learn from it, if some of these Confederate memorials, and I don't think it applies to the bases, but I think there's Confederate memorials that were definitely put up in an era to be symbols of against the civil rights movement, then those memorials are poisoned. But how far back and for what actions do we need to whitewash things out of our history? I know a lot of people in the Army, and I know some people fairly close, and I asked them, you know, who is Fort Hood named after? They have no flipping idea, and they'd served at Fort Hood for 6 years.
Same after Robert.
We're making an issue out of it, and when you put it out there as a simple thing, these are named after Confederates who were in rebellion. It's like, why the hell did we do that at the time?
I can tell you, right? I mean, post Civil War, you know, we're trying to bind the nation. The Southern states were forbidden for putting up, you know, war memorials or monuments. And, you know, it during Reconstruction, and in order to get beyond that, it's still to this day the bloodiest war in America's history, in order to bind the wounds, those monuments were allowed to be put up. Those bases were named for, you know, Confederate generals in the South. And that's why we did that. And to me, and I agree with your point, Will, we're trying to bleach our history. And you can't do that. Build the history out. Yeah, if you want to change the name, Fort Bragg in the museum, explain who he was, explain why it was named, and then explain why it was changed. Don't rip it down and throw it away and act like it never happened. That's not our history. Yeah. And that, to me, is my problem with the whole thing.
Yeah, because the next logical step is we have got to rename Washington, D.C. and the state of Washington and Washington County, that I think is in every state in the country. Jefferson Memorial's got to go. The Lincoln Memorial's got to go. You know that the first song that he requested be played when they had a big rally in front of the White House and they found out that Lee had surrendered, the song that he requested?
Dixie.
He's obviously not woke. So where does it stop?
Good question.
That's the question I ask.
So
the thing is, if you ask
someone who says
rename it, you say rename the bases, and that'll be enough.
The
next thing comes up.
Yeah, right. What breaks squelch, right? So the judging of – and, you know, to me, I wish I could remember when this was an item of discussion. But I looked in the early 19th century, right? The norm – was slave, the norm was slave owning until I want to say the 1840s, right? I want to say Spain is one of the first countries that prohibits the transfer.
England.
No, England wasn't. England prohibited the transportation. They didn't prohibit the owning until later. And so when you go through and you really study it, it was the way of the world when Washington lived and died, the world owned slaves. When Jefferson lived and died, the world owned slaves. It wasn't until much later, after both of them are dead, and now we get this, you know, this the 8,000-foot screwdriver, you know, of history to judge them for what they did wrong, right? And you know, and we don't judge them for the kind of men they were in the times that they lived. And so, but how do you win that argument these days? And the answer is you're not going to. Timmy, your thoughts?
I don't think that's the argument. I think what's happening here is an absolutely these people want to destroy the very foundations of Western civilization. The narrative now is we are irredeemably racist, and we have an irredeemable sin and stain which could never be atoned for. It doesn't stop. Look, my great-great-grandfather fought for the Union. I don't have a dog in a fight. You're talking Army bases. I don't particularly care. But I've got some friends who are in the Army who are very liberal guys who are devastated at the thought of these Fort Bragg losing its name. I don't think it's right because it's not being done in good faith. It's not being done for the reasons which you articulated, which is, you know, we shouldn't have done this because we kind of like we kind of should think this through. And now in this day and age, change these names. That's not what's being done. What's going to be done is whoever changes the name, there's going to be a committee. There's going to be BLM representation. And those names are going to be something that will stick in your craw on purpose because they can. Because it's not about reconciliation. It's not about getting along. It's about one side triumphing over another. And right now we're so far apart that I don't see how
I choose not to look at the issue like that. I choose to look at this issue as, right, if all four of us were black officers in the United States Army, black soldiers in the United States Army, I've got to go drive through the gate that extols the virtue, and I've got to work on a base of somebody who fought against this country to enslave my race. To me, that's the intellectual basis of it, right? Like, okay,
but not in its current.
It's just not that simple. It's just not that simple.
It is for me.
It is for you. What happens if one of those black officers happened to have an ancestor who actually wore a Confederate Union uniform as a black soldier?
That's his problem, not mine. I don't care. I don't care about that guy.
So, I can see that. I don't know where it stops though.
Right. No. I think the larger point is build out the history. If you want to take Lee's monument down, where are you going to put it? Right. What are you going to put up with it to show the people of Richmond that within a 40-mile square, right? Over 500,000 people were bought and sold, right? And or whatever the number is, right? I'm just at the corner of Broad and Fifth, right? 40,000 were sold there, blah 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 blah. The plantations in the region had this and tell the whole story. Don't tell half of it. And so to me, back to your point, Will, don't bleach our history. Build it out so people can learn from it. Jeffrey?
Yeah. While you're at it, take a knee too and say, "Hey, you know, on my knees, I'm saying I'm sorry."
Oh, we named we're sorry because we're going to tell the whole fucking truth.
We always tell the fucking truth. That truth's
no,
out
we
there.
Don't. No, we don't. We always tell the truth.
And
here's
the thing.
We don't.
And here's the thing: this isn't about any of that. Like Timmy says, this is about them right now. This amalgamation of college students and Black Lives Matter people trying to force stuff down our throat. You think they're going to think you're cool if you say I'm going to change?
I don't
the
give
name.
A shit, hey, Jeff. I don't give a shit what they think.
Oh yeah, you do. That's why you're saying this.
No,
what are you scared of? That's why you're saying it because you're like I want.
Because I'm worried that they want them to like me.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, I'm going to change all these. Names
thank
to
hey,
Rosa
thank
Parks,
God I have my ther-
the Rosa Parks amphibious.
Thank God I have my cool therapist guy. On to out me to everybody about my true motives in this shit.
Well, why else would someone do it? That's what they're going to think, though, Mac. Whether whatever
I don't care. I don't care what they. I don't it, care what they you know? Think. I don't care what they think. At the end of the day, my job is to take a look at an issue, to do the research on it, and formulate an opinion. Not be afraid to stand up and debate it in an open forum.
Well, of course, we're not afraid. we're not afraid to debate. And you laid it out pretty good. This is in the spirit of reconciliation, and they named these bases after traitor rebels. Okay, so there it is, and it's been that way since the late part of the 19th century. Now without any prompting either. I don't remember a groundswell people demanding that the Marine Corps not allow Confederate flags, or that the Army change all the names of these bases a little bit, but not that much.
Right.
Now they're doing it because this, this contrived crisis based on this, the murder of this guy by police officer, which almost everybody, I've never heard anyone say that this guy deserved to get what he got.
Right.
And, he wasn't, victimized. And because of that, now people want to do whatever they can to placate the mob. I say it's impossible to placate the mob, and it's important what they think. If they think that you're weak, they will not stop. Like Will was saying, where will it end? It won't end.
You're just playing me on that. You know my saying, like, I can't have you think I'm weak, like the Iraqis did. You confuse my restraint for weakness.
I don't even know what you're talking about now.
And I can't have that. Well, no, the lesson I learned in Iraq, right? Restraint is mistaken for weakness. And so if you don't respond like the strong man, right, responds, you're perceived as weakness, and this shit will go on and on and on and on.
Yeah, I mean, really, like, if we wait 6 months, and when this shit's all over with, they change, Fort Bragg to Fort Pershing or something like that, then no big deal.
No.
But to do it now, it makes it look like you're just caving into pressure.
What's the one? Fort Benning should become Fort Sherman.
Well, or how about Fort Patton?
Sherman. Sherman rolled through Georgia. Okay, don't be afraid to turn the screwdriver on those peach-eating clowns. As long as you're going to rename it, right? Who did he get? Didn't Sherman get to North Carolina too?
Yeah, he did.
Sherman East and Fort Sherman West. There's a cherry on top of it all.
Fort Forrest Gump.
No, sorry. That was a movie. That was an actual historical event. Okay. Will, final thought for the group? What book are you reading, Will? Well, first of all, a final thought. Then what book are you reading?
Just final thoughts. I got to tell you, I was really depressed last week about all of this. It was hard to see how we get through it. Interesting, I read Victor Davis Hanson. The guy's a classicist, and basically he tells you that we've seen all this before, 2,500 years ago or more.
Explain, hold on. Footnote, classicist for everybody.
He studies ancient Greece and Rome.
Okay, all right.
And so if you read his columns, often there'll be references to things that particularly the Greeks discovered 2,000 to 2,500 years ago. So between that and I'll tell you, I give you a plug for YouTube Tucker Carlson from last night, his opening. And says, have courage to speak the truth.
And that was Tuesday. So Tuesday night, Tucker Carlson. I agree. Will. Will tweeted, I was doing construction shit, and Will said, hey, make sure you watch that. And let me tell you, the tyranny of the mob is essentially what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And it should scare the shit out of everybody.
So I'm not as pessimistic as I was.
Why?
Some people, the glass, well, because at least when I think about, when I hear thoughtful people, try and describe history and then also reinforce values like courage, then it means you're not alone out there. So courageous people are going to come out. Sane people are going to come out eventually.
Right.
Because if not, it's bad. It goes to political violence. And political violence is not something this country can withstand. 400 million guns in private citizens' hands. So it's got to go a different way. We'll see.
And book you're reading this week?
So I finished that book I was reading last week, Narrative of a Revolutionary Soldier. Really recommend it. Just an interesting book. And then I read a book this week called Making of a Miracle. It's a story told by Mike Ruzzioni, who was a captain of the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team. And it's a sports book, but it's more than that. It's just it's a great story, and there's some inside things in there that I didn't know. But it's well written for that style of book. And then I just started yesterday a book by Lawrence Wright called The Terror Years. And he wrote a book called The Looming Tower, which was all about how we got to 9/11. And it was sort of a historical narrative. He's a magazine writer, so it's a nice style to read. And this book, The Terror Years, I think he wrote for the New Yorker magazine. And so he wrote like a piece about Zawahiri and about other people in the magazine. And then I think he took those and expanded them into big chapters. And so far I'm two chapters into it. And I think the book's been out just a couple of years. It's called Lawrence Wright, The Terror Years from Al-Qaeda to the Islamic State. And it's good. It's going to be painful. Just because the way he writes, you can sort of he puts all the history together, and you see opportunities and mistakes. And he's not critical; he's narrating them. But it's a good book.
Wow! Follow that one, Timmy. What are you reading? Green Eggs and Ham again?
I'm reading Six Frigates: The History and the Founding of the U.S. Navy by Ian Toll. It's actually it's pretty entertaining. It's a lot of stuff I didn't know.
Wow. Six Frigates.
Yeah. Six Frigates: The History of the Founding of the U.S. Navy. This is rather new. I think it's about 6-7 months old. But it was down the bottom of the stack, and I pulled it out, and it's entertaining because it's got nothing to do with anything that's happening now, so it's fun to read.
What a final thought!
Yeah, the beauty of those books is in those days when sailors and Marines got in a fight, the issue might be in doubt. You know?
No, straight up wasn't. Yeah, no straight shit. Up wasn't doubt because there was more of them.
Oh yeah, oh, absolutely. No, it's inspirational to read how these things came about. It really is. But my final thoughts is I was like Will. I was kind of I've been depressed a little bit, particularly last week when I found out we had a Black Lives Matter protest here in McAllen, Texas. It was they started downtown. I think there was about 7 or 8 white kids, and then a Mexican guy jumped out with a chainsaw. And it became a big national news story, the South Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And he was yelling racial slurs, which he helpfully translated into English, which isn't normal. The lingua franca was pretty much Spanish. So he's up there yelling at these kids who didn't know what he was saying. Then he starts to chainsaw, starts revving it, and he translates into English what he was saying, and he used the N-word. And yeah, so he's in trouble. But he's not going to get called out or have a Twitter mob or have people show up on his lawn or lose his job. He's just going to have to deal with the police for being a weirdo. But that was my observation. And so after seeing that, I thought, geez, I wonder how far this is going to spread. And I think however far it's going to spread, it's spread. I think it's going to start to calm down. But South Texas Chainsaw Massacre, interesting weekend.
Jeff, final thought and a book?
Yeah, I'm not reading shit. All I do is I'm consumed with worry and anger over what's going on with the country. I just try and get as much news as I can, which makes me feel worse. And my final thought is that I feel like a jerk for fighting this war since 2001 against these Muslims. The real fucking enemy is right here. You know, it's within our own country. We got a bunch of disloyal bastards. You know, who are going to make they could screw the whole thing up.
Yeah, I'm not reading shit either. I downloaded a book called Why America Loses Wars, Limited War and U.S. Strategy from the Korean War to the Present, written by a guy named Donald Stoker.
Stoker,
yeah, really good book.
So I downloaded that. I have not cracked it yet, but I do not share. Well, Jeff, pretty pessimistic. Will seems to be more optimistic, as is Tim. I'm not. I am not. We seem like, you know, what did General Pace say? You know, the Marine Corps is at war. America's at the mall, right? Yeah. And so I don't see like And the George Will thing now is in my head. Why haven't I not seen him write anything? And so where are these people that are, you know, guys like Charles Krauthammer, you know, and where are they that, and why are they silent? You know,
Charles is dead.
Well, I'm saying that where are people like him, you know, and why are they muted? I mean, if you haven't noticed, your nation fucking needs you right now, and it needs you to remind people of the moral obligation they have to this democracy, this experiment in democracy, to be stewards of it, right? And the guy at the New York Times fucking failed. And he should be universally rebuked because it doesn't work if we cannot discuss it openly. And if the institutions that are partial stewards of this don't do what they're supposed to do. So I'm still pessimistic about, because I think we have a culture that, you know, fuck, it hasn't come for me yet. Right. And then it reminds me of that quote, right? Well, you know, we will all hang together, right? Or we will surely all hang separately. And so to me, there's a collective aspect to this, and there's people that should be stewards of the collective that I don't hear their voices. If you don't watch Tucker Carlson, who's an intellectual guy, and he crafts it on a nightly basis, if you don't watch stuff like that, I mean, you're just fucking brain dead. And then, but you're not going to do anything because shit, it's not fucking with your life until it does. And then by that time, it's too fucking late. So to me, this whole idea of woke to what it is to be an American, to being a steward of people's right to have a voice, stewards of the discussion, true stewards of Martin Luther King's dream, which is to judge each other by the content of our character, not the color of our skin. Where the fuck is that? And from what I see, as Jeff says, I watch the news, and all I do is I see it being trampled by people with a single narrow agenda. And really, right, when you look at their agenda of Black Lives Matter, it's cops, right? And that's a sum total of less than 5 a year, right? While 7,404 people, black people, were murdered, mostly by black, but the pregnancy rate among black girls approaches 50% in the thing I saw put out by the Congressional Black Caucus. And where is the power of this nation to try to solve those fucking issues if, in fact, black lives do matter? And so I watch this thing and I see a bunch of pacifist people that won't stand up and say, hey, wait a fucking minute. And we have this fucking thing going on in our cities where they're being burned down and fucking looted and city halls getting taken over and police departments are ceding space because they don't want a confrontation. Well, at some point, if they want a confrontation, then you have to have it. So anyway.
Feel better?
No, I don't. I don't.
Well, George Will put a book out last year.
And what's the title?
About conservative sensibility. The reason you didn't hear about it is nobody reads him anymore because he's alienated all his fans, which used to be me. I think that nobody's silencing him. They're just not publishing him because he's not making it. He's not winning over any fans from the other side and all the people like me who.
Well, can't you be a conservative and comment on conservative issues even if you're not in support of Donald Trump? You don't like him? You can't be a conservative anymore?
Yeah, sure you can. But you got to comment on conservative issues without attacking Donald Trump as Orange Man Bad. The next thing, you know. And Hitler and whatnot. Look, man, that Trump's just a human. He's doing an okay job. I voted for the guy because he's an outsider. It's exactly why. I get why people don't like the guy. He's not perfect. He's done stupid things. But damn, the way people are going after him is unhinged. And that includes George Will. That includes John Allen. That now, unfortunately, includes General Mattis. And it's kind of upsetting to say that, but it's the truth.
All right. Yeah. Well, boys, first of all, always appreciate the conversation. And I hope everybody feels better. Will, obviously, less depressed now than he was last week. Jeff and I more more depressed, and Tim sounds happy as always. So all is good. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.